From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the year 2014 when global art sales hit a record. According to the European Fine Art Foundation, sales of art and antiques reached $54 billion last year, and that number makes it seem like this must be the best time ever to just be an artist. If only. Well, much of the money goes through the big auction houses, and much of the action focuses on the I can't believe that's the original kind of work. However you define the term artist, the reality is that most of them aren't seeing much of that $54 billion. They're working hard, and this hour we're asking our community to look inward. We're an arts town, no question about it. From the arts outstanding artists, to the galleries, to the events, and the way our art does reflect our community. But can we be an arts town if people aren't buying local art? And that's not to say that no one is buying local art. It's an admission that I don't have all the answers on this, but I do know that many artists and galleries are struggling. They're on the edges here. And there's a related question. We're an arts town. More and more, we seem to be a preservation town. Instead of knocking down and starting over, we're looking at history. We're seeking to preserve, to tell our stories, to connect to our past. But if we are a preservation town, how many of us are active in preservation efforts? They go together. This weekend, an event is aiming to connect us to art and preservation more personally. It's the annual Spectral Carnival put on by the Yards Art Collaborative. More on that coming up. And another event coming up is a final show, at least for now, for Gallery 1975. And we're hoping for a relocation. We're going to find out much more about Gallery 1975 as well. So a lot to talk about this hour with my guests. And they include Caitlin Mivas, who is the preservation planner with the Landmark Society of Western New York. Caitlin, nice to see you back.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Lehman is with Gallery 1975. Eric, nice to have you.
Thank you very much.
Jason Barber is a photographer and an artist. He works with Rochester Wall Therapy, among many other titles and lots of other hats. Nice to have you in studio. And
Thanks.
That's your cue.
Sorry. Yeah.
Danielle Abramson-Swartz is here. And Danielle is someone you probably know as our auction and station events manager, but you're in studio today because you're a volunteer for the arts in many ways and involved in what's coming up this weekend. What is coming up?
We have the annual Spectral Carnival happening at St. Joseph's Park. It is the Yard's biggest event. It starts Friday, 7 to 10:30, and it'll go on Saturday from 4 till 10:30. We have kids events from 4 to 6. Tickets are $10. You can get them at theyards.com, and it's a cannot miss night of otherworldly enchantments.
All right. Well, we'll be getting to more of that coming up here. I want to start this hour in an unusual place, but that is with Louis C.K. You see, here's the thing. I think if we're going to call ourselves an arts town, we have to ask if we deserve that label. And sometimes we feel good about it. You know, hey, we're an arts town. Hey, we're a preservation town. But are we actually doing something to deserve that? And for some reason, what it made me think of was Louis C.K.'s bit on whether we tell ourselves nice things to feel good, but do we deserve to feel good if we're not actually acting on them? Let's listen to the point as Louis C.K. made it.
Anyway, so I was on a plane, I'm in first class, and a soldier gets on a plane. I see soldiers fly all the time, because that's how they get to the war. You think they get to go in a cool green plane with a red light, go, go, go! No, they just go to Delta, and they just wait in line to go to a war. And they always fly coach. I've never seen a soldier in first class in my life. And they're always nice. And every time that I see a soldier on a plane, I always think, you know what, I should give him my seat. It would be the right thing to do. It would be easy to do, and it would mean a lot to him. I could go up to him, hey, son, I get to call him son. Hey, son, go ahead and take my seat. And I should trade with him. I never have. Let me make that clear. I've never done it once. I've had so many opportunities. I never even really seriously came close. And here's the worst part. I still just enjoyed the fantasy for myself to enjoy. I was actually proud of myself for having thought of it. I was proud. Oh, I am such a sweet man. That is so nice of me to think of doing that and then totally never do it.
All right, that's Louis C.K. Eric, can I start with you?
Sure.
Do you relate to that in any way? How does that feel hearing that?
I mean, I tend to think of myself as a
man of action.
Well, you are a man of action. I'm asking you about our community. And, I'm not, and by the way, I'm not doing this to take a big shot at Rochester's and our community. What I'm asking you is someone who's Gallery 1975 is going to be closing at least for a little while.
Yes.
You've seen the struggling artists.
Oh, yeah.
No question about it.
And struggling galleries.
And struggling galleries.
Yeah.
And I thought of that because I thought, how interesting that we like to congratulate ourselves in some way, but are we supporting the arts enough?
You know, as I was writing with Megan beforehand, and I've had countless conversations, it's a very gray issue, right? There's some elements of the arts that are absolutely being supported. You look at the great things happening with fringe and performance-based arts. Those seem to be not as struggling as some of the other fine arts. You know, in my honest opinion, in dealing with the day-to-day with both the gallery, all the artists that I've brought up and tried to shine a light on, everyone's struggling. There's very few people who are getting, financial gain. There's fame and notoriety, that people are now recognizing these names. And I think, through what we've done with Wall Therapy, through, what we've done through the gallery, I mean, art is in the public sphere. Fine art in that regard is also in the public sphere. It's being talked about a lot more, but there is that disconnect between, paying for it, helping support those type of things,
right,
and how it gets there and how it becomes and how that also becomes a feasible, maintainable thing.
This conversation, by the way, is not to put a quota on anyone.
No.
You don't support the arts unless you buy at least three local pieces.
Absolutely not.
That's not the way it works. And plenty of people listening love the arts and can't afford.
Right.
So that's not what it's about. I think it's more about, for the people who can't afford, are you actively supporting it?
Right. Yeah. And I'll use a little bit of like a Wall Therapy example. It's amazing where it's come in the last 5 years. You see, it went from pitchforks a little bit in the 2012, especially, to now being one of the most welcome and exciting, anticipated times of year. Everyone loves to say, "Oh, this is great," but in the end, it's about the same, maybe 100 to 200 people who are paying for that every year and supporting it. And you can only go back to that well so many times before that well goes dry. Mm-hmm. And we've been working to how do we expand that out? How do we get people to help be a part of that as well. But it's a challenge. It's a giant challenge.
Okay. Jason Barber, what do you make of not only what you heard, but how it compares to us as an arts town?
Well, one of the issues I've noticed, especially with the MoMA Art Gallery, is their quota on demographics of memberships is low amongst the age groups of 25 to 45. The age of people who are becoming members at the MoMA Art Gallery or, donating money are older. And you're not seeing that Generation X and that millennial generation donated and invested, even in institutions of art, not just the artists themselves. So it's definitely been, I agree with Eric completely, because I've witnessed it.
But does that generation, that cohort might say, well, we collectively don't have as much disposable income to do that.
Yes, but they also have disposable income because they want to use it for experiences instead of for investment. A lot of times they'll spend the money on, I kind of went around before I heard this and talked to a lot of people within that generation. I talked to kids in Explore Rochester. I talked to even kids at like Scratch Bake Shop, just like random questions. Like, what do you guys think about this? Why aren't you guys doing this? And a lot of the times they came up to me going like, well, we just don't know, or we just want to have the fun experience and spend the money. I'm like, but look, if you saved the amount of money you spent at Poor Coffee or Fuego, for a month, you could probably easily.
Watch it there, buddy.
I love coffee too, and I go to both those places, and I have tons of friends at both those places. Love you guys.
Couldn't you set like a national chain, like a Starbucks?
Let's just say Starbucks. Yeah, Starbucks. The amount of money we spent on just the experience of food and coffee alone, just to cut back on that for a month, we could buy one of the a good piece from one of these artists, or put a small investment in one of these institutions. I mean, $75 to become a member at the MAG, and most people our age don't even realize that. It's that cheap, and you have free membership all year. You can walk in whenever you want. It's not free membership, sorry, but you can walk in whenever you want.
Absolutely. Danielle, what do you think?
Well, I really do agree, and the point about experiences, mm-hmm. I think, is right on the nose. A lot of people, if money is tight, you're making a decision about what you want to spend your money on, and for some people, the experiences matter because there's the memories and things that you can keep with you, while a piece of art is something that now is a thing that you have to be responsible for and you have to have a place to put that thing, and we're a more mobile mm-hmm. generation and we have less income and we're housing is changing, we're not buying homes as much. So you have all of that in the background. But at the end of the day, we cannot be an arts community if we don't have thriving artists making a living here. I mean, if you have artists who can only sustain for a couple of years and then they have to go to those bigger cities, even though they would like to stay here because they know the vibe is there, that's a problem. I mean, think about it. There are, I think, like three shows that were at 1975 that are currently on the Best of Rochester's final ballot.
City, yep.
From the city paper. Mm-hmm. So that just, and that's all, you know, people submit that information. So clearly there is a huge groundswell of support. But I know a lot of those artists specifically are people who are struggling to make mm-hmm. a living here. So the love is there. How mm-hmm. can we make it so that they can truly be of Rochester and make a living and thrive? Because we all want to do better.
But Eric, to be clear here, what's going on with 1975?
Again, that's another semi-complicated thing. It's twofold. One is I've been doing it for 7 years. It, you know, first as pop-ups, and then the last 3 years over in downtown. And after a lot of soul searching, looking at the finances, it's and just looking at my workload. I work full time at RIT. If we're going to talk about what it takes to make it live, I work full time at RIT. I run our 975 gallery, and I'm the lead organizer for Wall Therapy. And sometimes I sleep. Yeah,
right.
And it's led to a very like work, and ironically enough, not having enough of those experientials with all these wonderful people I'm meeting, and so on the personal side, I want to take a step back, and be able to kind of experience what has happened in the last 7 years, do research. We've made all these connections. Like, how can we build both the gallery and the Rochester scene and make it bigger, but then also look for just a slightly different space. This was a great kind of starter brick and mortar. I now know what I want in a gallery. I know what I need in a local gallery. But also trying to figure out how can we create a space where more people are coming in more often. We basically have the giant bump for the opening, and then maybe 50 people in a month. Six people. It's like you kind of get the strangle. It's like you can't keep doors open that way. Mm-hmm. And like I said, with juggling everything, it's just this crazy juggling act, and something has to give so that we can rebuild it and grow again.
But when Danielle talks about artists who want to make a living,
right.
You're someone who runs a gallery, but you have to do other things to make a living.
Yeah,
artists are we talking about? Most artists in this town probably are not able to make a living just on their art, right?
Oh, that's the majority.
Right.
Majority. I mean, and so here's the other thing too, and I don't know, we're talking very briefly about this experience I had. So a couple years ago, I went and saw Herb and Dorothy at the Little. And it was a great crowd, largely older crowd. There's maybe a handful of people in the 30s. And if you've never seen it, go watch that documentary. It's delightful. And it's about Herb and Dorothy. They lived off her income and bought art, minimalist art in the 60s, because they just wanted to be part of the scene. They wanted to support these artists. As it would happen, that became very valuable. Their original intent was not to invest. It was to support the artists. And so we watch this thing. I'm touched because that's very much where I come from. And then there's a panel afterwards, and one of the people on the panel, the first thing they say is like, only buy blue chip art. Don't buy anything less than blue chip art. It's an investment. Blah, 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 blah. Mm. And I'm sitting there going like, did you not just watch the same documentary? Mm. If you don't invest in young artists, when their art's affordable, but you don't invest in it, they won't be there to become blue chip artists.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really the gap that we're seeing. It's a lot of talk and like, oh, we love you, but it's everyone still has to eat.
Is there anything vulgar about using the term, not vulgar, but only thinking about art purchases as investment?
To me, I will speak only for myself, and not, I'd say maybe one or two pieces. And I, for those who know me, like my house is a gallery.
Yes.
Floor to two stories, floor to ceiling, covered, flat files.
You're supporting me.
For anyone who asks, I put my money where my mouth is always. And, there's maybe one or two in there that I'm like, oh, this will be a good investment. I might sell it. And then the other 1,000 pieces are because it spoke to me. I had a connection. That art enriches my life. So for me, like, and even when I deal with collectors, like and trying to create new collectors and teach people how to collect and how it can enrich their life. for me, it's really important that, like, if you're going to just buy it to flip it, I actually don't want to sell it to you. That's not a good investment for the artist either. Mm. That's not a good thing for them. You know, we're looking for people who want to bring art into the home, bring a part of their life. I get to go, like, wake up every day. I've been collecting since about 2000. I get to look at this crazy assortment of art, you know, all this, you know, imagination and talent, and be inspired every single morning I wake up, as long as I wake up on time. but you know, getting that moment and trying to get people to that. And one of the great things about the gallery is we've been many, many people's first original art purchase. Mm-hmm. Like we've opened the door to them and seen that art is for everyone. It's and that is the other thing, kind of talking about the experiential, kind of tying in, like there's a, you know, one of the first things that happens in the you know, year one of the gallery was having people go, I'm afraid to go to XYZ gallery, but I feel really comfortable here. Mm-hmm. And so there's a fear of going to these institutions that, you know, sort of, you know, of that younger demographic, like or a hesitancy because they don't feel like they belong there. And so part of what Night Symphony has been trying to do is like, no, art's for everyone. Come on in, hang out. We're listening to music, looking at art.
But I'm feeling troubled then that you're closing your doors.
You should.
It's part of what this conversation is about. I challenged our listeners earlier this morning, you know, when's the last time you bought a piece of local art? I actually got a lot of response. It's great. Meredith wrote, last weekend at the Haunted Hungerford, fantastic artist.
Great.
She showed an example. Caleb wrote, Ever the Troublemaker, Evan, calling us out. Calling us out as a community. I'm not challenging our reputation. I'm just asking.
That's a good question.
But Caleb also says, what is local and what constitutes art? But another listener jumped right in and said, I think local means something produced within 30 to 50 miles of where you are. It's probably a good baseline, sure. I think. But there's so many more examples. Jen Karkashian at Rock Brewing, Mary says. Mike says, our house and business are filled with creations from local artists. We are one talented community, et cetera. So we're getting a sense for the art. In a second, I want to talk about how preservation works together with this and whether, you know, we're growing as a preservation community. Before we do that, Joe has been waiting to jump in on this point specifically. Go ahead, Joe.
Hello. I recently got married at 1975.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Amy.
Yeah.
Is this a planted caller?
No.
No. Amy, my wife, is more attuned to the art community in Rochester. But from what I would think of an art community, isn't there normally, an affluent patronage of the arts? I mean, is there a disconnect in the art community between, you know, these sponsors that are, you know, have an abundance of money or resources to support that? I mean, I don't know personally, and that's I guess that's one thing that I would want to ask and see what your guys' opinion is.
Thanks for the phone call.
Yeah.
I'll start with the 1975.
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely. I'll give one real quick experience. I did a tour for the mag of the wall therapy things, right? Acted as tour guide, talking about the artists. And then was one gentleman, I could see he was like, I don't really want to be here. But I was like, well, you know. And we go through, and as we're talking about the art and explaining the art and educating about the art and what's going on, you know, by the time we got to lunchtime, he's like, thank you for opening my eyes. Like, mm-hmm. I kind of always looked down at it. And now that I've understood more about it, I appreciate it that much more. And I think that is part of it, you know, is arts education, both, you know, the arts education that's getting cut in schools versus just staying attuned as we all get older to what else is going on. I mean, we all like to fall in our ruts. We're all guilty of it. And we like what we like, and but as we get older, we don't want to open ourselves up. But I think we lose out on such richness around us if that's all we do. If, like, this is all I want, I don't want anything else. You know, that's a very, that's not a rich life.
Go ahead, Danielle.
And I will agree with Joe that there is a strong community of people mm-hmm. in Rochester who do buy art, and they buy the names that they know, and we all know those names. There's people who've been in this community who are internationally recognized. Mm-hmm. And you'll
deservedly
see,
so.
Deservedly so, absolutely. And you'll see that art in a lot of people's homes. But one of the things that is missing from that, that disconnect, and the thing that's so important, and also why like the Vogel Art Collection is so special, is that accessibility piece. It's something we strive to do here at WXXI, what 1975 does, what Wall Therapy does so beautifully, is making art accessible to people who might not have interacted with it otherwise. And that's why it's important to support these local artists, because these are people that you can talk to that individual. You can be friends with that artist. You can be part of their life and understand them. And then all of a sudden, you're broadening horizons in a way that you never even thought before. When you wake up and look at that art, and it transforms your world. And that's what's important about giving support to these local artists, these burgeoning artists, these people who might not find a national stage otherwise, because you're just bringing more to the table. And that's why we need to invest there. It's good to buy the people you know, because that, you know, if you want to invest in art, that's fine, because we need that community. But you have to translate to the risks and take the chances, because who knows what you could be bringing to light that could change somebody's perspective.
This weekend's event ties art and preservation together. And what Danielle just said about having a chance to have art be accessible, easily, say easily understood, that's debatable, but understanding the actual artist, meeting them, getting to know them, you can translate a lot of that to preservation, I think. And I want to bring in Caitlin Mivas from Landmark Society. How do you see preservation and art weaving together, not only just this weekend, but in general?
Yeah, I think the Spectral Carnival this weekend is taking place at St. Joseph's Park, which is a former church that burned down and that we, the Landmark Society, own, and we converted it to an urban park. And that is, this event is like a perfect example of how the arts and preservation, historic buildings and spaces can come together and create some really great synergy. So the Spectral Carnival last year, if anyone went to it, my experience at least was that it was the perfect use of that historic space. It really maximized the character and the energy of that space, and the two just came together
For those who didn't, Caitlin, tell us a little bit more about the space and why you think it did work so well in that space.
So the space is basically three walls of the stone church, as well as the clock tower and sort of the front facade of the church that remain. And then we've got trees and some plantings inside of those three walls. So it's sort of an open air, semi-enclosed park space. And, you know, when you're in there, everyone always says that it has sort of this magical feeling. And I think you get that really with any historic building. It's got some intangible character to it because of the materials and sort of the history that you can feel when you're in it. You can almost touch it, that you just feel this great energy when you're in that space and when you're in any historic building. So that combined with the art that the Yards brings and the energy that the people from the Yards bring and the activities that they had going on at the Spectral Carnival, they had sort of fun carnival-themed games and face painting and dance performances going on. It just was like all this stuff came together, and it was awesome.
Now let me specifically ask you then, Caitlin, a similar question that the rest of the panel has been kicking around, which is sort of earned reputation. Some of the most feedback we get on this program has been when the Landmark Society has been on. People are really engaged when they find out the work that you and your colleagues are doing, because they are thinking about, everyone can probably think about a place growing up, a building growing up, something they drove past, something that they use, something they're concerned that might be torn down or redeveloped, et cetera. And people connect to that. And you helped create the YUPS, the Young Urban Preservationists, because you think there's a place in this community for people, there's no age limit, but sometimes of a younger cohort. And what I want to know is, are you seeing action? Are you seeing more people getting involved? And are people actually sort of following through on what we feel on this program whenever we talk to the Landmark Society?
Yeah, definitely. Going back to what Jason was saying about the Memorial Art Gallery and not having a lot of younger membership and people, showing up and being patrons of the arts, I think a lot of that is a generational thing. And I think, and this applies to nonprofits across the board, mm-hmm. whether it's the arts, the Landmark Society, what have you, we have to, as nonprofits, we have to look at engaging my generation, the millennials, in a different way. I think it's incumbent upon us to figure that out. We can't expect them to just come to us. So we've seen a lot of success with the YUPS in that regard. And I think we talked a little bit about those experiences and I think people in our generation really want to engage in a meaningful way. Maybe they don't have the money to become a member or to donate to your campaign. But I think if you get them in the door early now with a really great experience, a personal connection to your organization, and making them feel like they're making a difference, then, you know, maybe down 10 years down the road when they've got some more disposable income, they will give back in a financial way. And we are seeing younger folks getting involved in the UPS for sure.
Well, let me borrow part of what Jason's point earlier about, you know, people who are in that maybe 25 to 45, a lot less likely to be a member of the MAG, for example, a lot less likely to be a member of a lot of things, you know, whether you're supporting the Landmark Society. WXXI kicks off our pledge. Is it tomorrow, Dan?
Tomorrow.
All right, so our pledge drive starts tomorrow, and don't worry, I'm not about to pitch at you. though at the same time, I actually love pitching because I so believe in it. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're somebody in your 20s or your 30s or whatever your age is right now, but you consider yourself, well, I don't really have a whole lot of money to support the arts, et cetera, et cetera, I would never begrudge anyone. You must do this or that. Mm-hmm. I think Jason's point earlier is that we maybe miss a chance to get a little more connected, and it doesn't require a big ticket purchase. $54 billion in art sold around the world last year. But again, a lot of that's in auction houses. Most of us are not going to auction houses.
Mm-hmm. No.
So if you feel like I love XXI, but I don't really have enough money to be a member, I would say you're probably wrong. Mm. And tomorrow we're going to start hitting you over the head with that. But it's the same kind of thing when it comes to Landmark and the arts. We are voting with our wallets, and that's a consistent theme on this program. I think it's well taken. The phone's starting to ring. If you want to join the conversation, I'd love to have you. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI. If you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Let's get a break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about this weekend's events. We'll work through more of your comments on Twitter, at Evan Dawson, more of your phone calls as well with our panel straight ahead on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, first hour, we talk to Michael Shermer, the publisher of Skeptic magazine. He's a longtime libertarian who is breaking with many of his colleagues because he says it is time to look more thoroughly at the possibilities of gun control. Then, second hour, the value of play-based education. Is our educational system pushing play out? Talk with you Friday on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Image Out, Rochester's LGBT film festival, celebrating 23 years of presenting films, art exhibitions, and special events October 8th through the 18th. Tickets and information available at imageout.org. And Bond, Chenick & King, a full-service law firm with 11 offices serving companies, not-for-profits, municipalities, and individuals in New York State and nationally. More at bsk.com.
Welcome back to Connections, and I warn Caitlin Mivas that if you're here in studio and our listeners know, they are going to want to talk to the Landmark Society about preservation issues, which, by the way, is great. Do you not think it's great?
I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, there you go. So let's get to the phones, and Catherine in Fairport has a comment or question for Caitlin. Go ahead, Catherine.
Hello. I really love some of the old buildings in Rochester, and I was so shocked to see in the newspaper the other day that little tiny house building near Geneva was knocked down over the weekend, so it's gone. But what I really wanted to talk about is the Rochester Savings Bank, which is downtown, built in 1927. It's now Citizens Bank, and I've heard about it every once in a while, a little whisper in the paper. So the other day, my friend and I decided we were downtown. Oh, we had a terrible time trying to park near the building, but I went inside, and we just were speechless. It is such a grand space, the mosaics, the marble, everything, and it seems so neglected and so sad, and I wonder what the Landmark Society can do to make it more visible and more important in our memory, because it's a wonderful building.
Yeah, that is probably, that interior space is maybe one of the top five coolest historic spaces in downtown Rochester, no doubt. So Citizens Bank is in the banking hall, and then RIT's Center for Urban Entrepreneurship, I think, I don't know if I've got that wording exactly right, they actually own the building, and I think are working on rehabbing the back end of it and putting that program in that space. So that's a great use for it. And as that part of downtown continues to be revived, the Sibley Building and East Main Street, that's going to be another great piece of the puzzle there.
Okay, has it already been listed as an architectural treasure or something to be preserved by the Landmark Society?
Historic designations are all functions of the government. So There's the National Register of Historic Places, and then there's the City of Rochester through their zoning code. There's local landmarking, and it has both of those designations, yeah.
Oh, that's good to know. Yep. So I kept thinking, wouldn't it be grand to have a reception or a party in there at night with lamps glowing and the mosaics glittering? I urge everybody, if you can find a place to park downtown, to go in when the bank is open, because it is quite an absolutely gorgeous space. And I'm glad I had a chance to tell you about
it. There you go. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you for the phone call. And Caitlin, did you want to just elaborate a little bit more on, everyone grimaced when she mentioned the little building near Jiva that came down.
Yeah, so that was an 1830s Greek Revival style house that was sort of a holdover from an earlier era in that neighborhood. And it was just sort of one little piece of that history when that neighborhood was a residential neighborhood. And the developer was actually planning to rehab it and put a new use in there. But the construction crew, as they were working on it, basically part of the wall collapsed and they couldn't really save it. So very unfortunate.
It looked like it physically hurt you when to bring that.
It always does. It's you know, very emotionally and physically painful.
Joel wants to know if the murals in Eastman Dental have been saved.
Yeah, I believe as part of that rehab project that they are, I think, recreating some of those murals.
Okay, so I could just go straight down my Twitter feed and read the list of all the great examples of listeners who have bought local art recently, and I love that. That's a great sign, and we're already seeing an interest in preservation. So if you're just joining us, we're talking about the convergence of art, preservation, and our status as an arts and preservation town might mean stepping up and really supporting very directly. And so Danielle Abramson-Swartz is here. She is not only someone you know from WXXI as our auction and station events manager, but she's also a volunteer in the arts community. And so remind us what's coming up this weekend.
So the Arts has its third annual Spectral Carnival at St. Joseph's Park. As Caitlin so wonderfully described it, it's an incredible space. Friday and Saturday night starts at 7 on Friday, goes till 10:30. There's also an after party at Cure afterwards if you want to get down for that. And then on Saturday from 4 till 10:30, there's children events specifically from 4 to 6. So you can come down and enjoy some original performances, some gorgeous art that all these incredibly talented people connected with the Yards hand make every year. And it really just makes the space incredibly spectacular. You're not going to see anything like it.
Candace just wants to know, how do I find new artists? I don't want to just support the same person all the time. It sounds like there's all these great people out there. Jason, Barbara, what do you think?
Get involved. I think for me, I got involved with the Yards first because one of my friends, Marissa, who I went to high school with, was part of it, and she introduced me to Eric, and now I'm just like in the center of it, and I love it. And it's really just getting involved and going to the galleries, talking to, you know, the gallery owners. Go into an art event like Wall Therapy, whatever fundraisers we do, and meeting the artists, meeting people who are involved. Go into the Yards, which is, you know, right above Cure, and we're open every Sunday. So you come on up, talk to the artists, talk to, you know, and it's really just starting the investment of just it's not like a financial investment. It's the emotional investment. It's the actual kind of one-on-one of meeting these people and getting to know them and actually understanding their art, understanding what they do. And I think that's, I mean, you can collect, you want to collect everybody's art after that. You're just going to sit there and be like, I want your piece, I want your piece. Just like, because as soon as you start getting involved with them, because you get to know them as friends.
And spending time on First Fridays. I mean, Rochester is so great on First Fridays. I mean, the Hungerford, someone mentioned they just had a great two-day event last weekend. First Fridays there is great. But Jason is totally spot on. You have to just spend the time. I mean, people who say there's nothing to do in Rochester, you're clearly not looking around. Because I don't have enough time in my weekends to fit in all of the things you can do. A lot of it is free. But you're making these connections. You're finding a community of people. And that's what happened to me. Like, I kind of got involved. You know, what I do at XXI kind of naturally lends itself to knowing a lot of people. And once you get in, you're just like, I'd do anything for these guys. I love how they love Rochester. That's the best part of what happens at 1975 and the Yards and the Hungerford and all of this stuff. These are people who have a deep love for this town and are making a choice to create art here. And there's a reason, and it's because of this love. So what we're just trying to do is say, translate the love to a little bit of investment.
Well, there you go. And I'm there's a lot I want to work through in the last 18 minutes or so. I want to get back to the phones in 1 second. Roy, we're coming to you. But here is a comment from Sarah Rutherford listening to the program.
Hi, Sarah.
And here's what she wants to say. She said, I think some of this issue also revolves around artists understanding their own worth and pricing accordingly. Mm-hmm. I have found a wealth of support from the community of Rochester, but that tends to have a price ceiling. The gap lies in bridging the collector that can afford a higher priced purchase with local artists, as well as not underpricing ourselves. I have found much of the education in what art is worth becomes our responsibility as the artist. Eric.
Yeah, it is absolutely that twofold thing. And this is a conversation Sarah and I have had many, many times. And figuring out how to make those connections, but also understanding your worth, understanding like what certain pieces are. You know, as artists, one of the things I've always counseled them on is creating tiers of work, so that you can have something that an average person who's just starting to come into a gallery might be able to afford, and then you tier up to the works from the heart that are the ones that the more serious collectors can. But it's about creating relation. You know, as we talk about, it's about relationships. There's one great example. Someone who used to work for me at RIT, who moved away, came back right when the Yards was opening up, and I was doing a show with them. Bought his first piece of art, and he's actually become one of my biggest patrons. Where he's like, what's the new? What's the greatest ones? You know, what's coming up? And one of the things he wants to meet the artists and build these relationships. And then, you know, the artists having to, you know, make use of all these free tools or inexpensive tools that are out for you. You know, to answer the a question from how do I find artists? If you have a smartphone, if you have a web browser, go to Instagram and mm-hmm. and look at, any of our accounts at the Yards, 95-ish, Wall Therapy, and just start clicking links. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, that's one of the ways that we find wall therapy artists or I find artists for the gallery is I look through Instagram when I see something I look at, you know, that I like, I find out more. If the person's someone I want to work with, then we bridge that gap. In 7 years in the gallery, there've been, it's right around 200 different artists have shown on the walls, and only maybe a third of them are not from here. You know, most of that 200 are Rochester based artists. Or have spent, you know, 4 years during school and then they moved away, but they have some connection to Rochester. So using those social media tools to kind of make new connections, put yourself out there a little bit more, take an active role in it. You know, there's that, you know, the fantasy of the, you know, the undiscovered artist. Someone's just going to find me. And I
can't just create art and sit back.
You can't,
it's going to move.
Yeah. I've taught classes about this stuff. One of the first things I say is like, no one cares about you. like that's like the first thing
that's
I
like
tell
the
them.
Best advice ever.
No one cares about you. It's your job to help people understand why they should care about you. And I think that goes from preservation, that goes to the arts, that goes to music, whatever. It's you know, we talk about this experiential society, especially with the younger generations. Like, it is about the experience, which is fantastic. I do really love that. But if that is what people are craving, you know, you have great events like Spectral Carnival, which it's wild. It is a transformed wonderland that you walk into, and you walk away totally touched, changed, moved, and that is one half of the puzzle. That kind of opens the door, but is then also up to the general public, the non-creators, to take a little initiative, look around, ask questions, like any of us. You know, who are involved in our world, the arts world are generally pretty open and inviting. That's one comment time and time again. You know, we bring all these international artists in through Wall Therapy, and by the end of the week, they're like, we don't want to leave. Can we stay? Can we buy a house? Can we? Yeah. We don't want to leave here because of that welcoming, open environment. And we've now have an international reputation as an arts community. Also, you know, in that niche world. But it does take fostering from those of us who also live here.
I love the idea of telling people nobody cares about you because nobody knows you. Make them care about you and your
art.
Got
to get on the radar.
And you know, I imagine Caitlin Mivas would say the same thing about nobody cares about buildings. you have to make them, sometimes you have to put them inside it and then link them to the history for them to do it. If they're just driving by, but here's Carolyn on Twitter responding to Caitlin's comment about Rochester Savings Bank with one of the top five coolest interior spaces. She says, so true. It's an unbelievable building and everyone should come downtown to see it. But people probably don't care about buildings unless they've either had some kind of experience, been inside it, you know, the abstract driving past it, it's a hard sell. Yeah. How do you reach people and make them care not just about people, but about buildings?
I think one way to do that, there's a lot of different ways, but I think one way to do that is to do bring people to events in those buildings, like Spectral Carnival and St. Joseph's Park. I mean, our whole thing with reopening St. Joseph's Park after it had been closed for more than a decade was we wanted to get as many groups in there programming it, as many people in there as possible to just experience the space. Mm-hmm. Because once you do that, you have a personal connection with that space and you don't want to see anything happen to it.
I feel like I recall the conversation about the Chautauqua, the amphitheater at the Chautauqua Institution, the conversation there, this historic amphitheater, about essentially destroy it and rebuild it as close as you can to the original, or work within the existing framework, refurbish but keep the bones. And the people who had been there called this program and said, until you are there, you just don't know. And it's easy for you to say from the outside, who cares, blow it up, start it over. But I think there is a much more of a connection when you're in the space. Danielle, you wanted to jump in there?
Well, I think what's happening and like the idea of bringing people to the space, making people aware of what's going on. I think maybe it was last week or maybe earlier this week, but you had a conversation about how we're a river city with a waterfall in the middle of our downtown. And
Two
waterfalls.
What is that, two?
Look on Jason's Instagram.
We had a ton of people calling the show
I
saying,
did not have
I didn't even really know about some of this.
Right.
Never been there.
Exactly.
Never seen it.
Yeah. So it's this idea that Rochester, I always say we have greatness in our bones. I mean, there is such richness in the history here. And that's why we are so interested in preservation, because we feel that. We get that sense. It comes out, and it comes out in these landmarks, the way we create art, why artists are so inspired. But there's this, we got to make more people know that you can do that too. You can be a part of this too. You can come find these things. This is, you don't have to be afraid of downtown. You can come to these new spaces. And the more people who do, the more the spaces are reclaimed and the more it becomes part of people's general awareness of our community. So it also is about being a little brave and trying something new and taking a risk.
Absolutely.
Let me get back to the phones and Roy in Rochester. Next up, go ahead, Roy.
Hi. An interesting and nice free-ranging talk. I'd support those points. That, as Eric said, Rochester may be better known outside of Rochester for wall art people who are practitioners than inside the town. And I guess reaching out that experience in aesthetics and whatever it is, whether you thought it was painting or watercolors or sculpture or architecture, it's very hard. Yeah, I think it's very hard. I studied photography. My teacher in conservation just looked at us all and said, remember that 99% of every photograph taken since 1839 is gone. It went to the garbage. And when we look around, it can be a hard life on many levels, whether you're a wedding photographer or you think that making fine art platinum nudes is the way to go. What I did in the end was I had a series of retinal detachments. It made seeing a little bit different for me. And I needed to do something to cover my disability coverage. And I was walking down to the library to volunteer. They said, find a not-for-profit. I don't think I wanted to hump timbers for buildings. No doubt a younger person could go with that. And on my way there walking, I walked by the firehouse on Monroe Avenue and looked in the window at Genesee Center. And I saw the printing presses, and I said, well, what about this? And so I volunteered there. That was 7 years ago.
All right. Well, Roy, I just want to jump in because I see the phone ringing and I don't want to run out of time. But he's talking about volunteering there and volunteering an arts organization.
That's a great organization.
Lots of ways to get involved, right? Wouldn't you say, Jason?
Yeah, that's a great organization. I mean, there's so many different ways to get involved. I mean, as a volunteer, you can be. I mean, you can volunteer at the MAG, at Well Therapy, the Yards. We always, you know, there's always needs, and it's just trying to find out, contacting them, and reaching out and saying, "What can I do? What can I be a part of?"
We are blowing up the Twitter feed this hour, by the way.
Oh,
and
our
friends over at Writers and Books say they're standing
savvy.
They're standing in the office at Writers and Books applauding this interview. Sharp, smart, fun. Thank you all to the panel for this. Very nice. But Alan writes to the program, sends me an email, and says, has the Landmark Society guest ever eaten in a chain restaurant? Now, come on, Alan. That's not to
no.
say.
Never.
Caitlin Mivas has been to Henrietta. She probably doesn't want to all the time, but this is not a question of saying I'll never eat in a chain restaurant.
Mm-mm.
That was a... It was a cheap shot from Alan. You've probably been in a chain restaurant.
No, she doesn't even know.
What's a chain restaurant? No, occasionally I do, sure. You know, I also have flush toilets in my house. you know, preservationists are not like crazy people stuck in the past. But I definitely do try to put the money I do spend, I try to spend the majority of it on local businesses and local artists for sure.
Okay, a couple other questions online about just defining that. So one of our listeners on Twitter said 30 to 50 miles. Is there, Eric, a definition of what a local artist is?
To me, not, you know, that's it's like splitting hairs, but I think it's, I mean, local artists could be Buffalo, Syracuse, Ithaca.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's, it depends on what you're defining by those regions. I mean, at its bare bones, look around you, look in the city paper every week. There's plenty of openings, you know, each month that are 95%, 99% local artists. Like, you know, it's artists from Flint. And I'm also not saying, like, don't not support, you know, support the artists you like, but you never know what's hidden right underneath you if you don't widen that span and just start exploring.
Well, Stephen on Twitter is saying that he agrees with Eric, saying you wanted to be an accessible gallery.
Oh, absolutely.
You wanted to take, and that's what so much of the ethos of what 1975 has been. Stephen says he agrees, you know, sadly, often that concern was valid, that people had walking in and feeling a bit of a, I know, some sort of separation, some removal, some iciness.
Well, and yeah, that was our whole thing. I mean, if you're, and we're open for one more month till the 31st.
Come on in. And where are you?
We're at 89 Charlotte Street, right behind Tufine, the little
Hearts.
You know, Hearts. It's a one-story brick building covered with murals. You can't miss us. And it's, you know, it's called Here Lies. Here Lies 1975. You know, this is kind of a going away Halloween themed, and you know, 60 plus artists, most of whom are from Rochester.
Man, that's so final. Here Lies.
Oh,
it
I love
now.
It.
I know.
Don't worry. Don't worry.
Wait till you check out the art.
Think about the trend
check
in zombie movies.
Reaper.
We all come back.
That's right.
You know, and it's the end of this chapter. You know, and you know, we're gonna go into version 3 of this evolution. But no, it's always been, you know, for me, because it's always been like, how did you get this collection? You know, my own personal collection. I was like, I just asked. I looked at the internet. I looked at Instagram. I used social media. I went to shows. I just went to go and exploring. Like, I'd see, I like that art. Who do they like? You know, this artist is cool. Who influences them? Who inspired them? And just kind of going down the rabbit hole of that, especially in the day, you know, the age of the internet, it's very easy to find. It's actually too hard. There's too many people out doing cool stuff. One interesting thing, and you know, if we talk about support versus basically financial support, one of the challenges I've had in the last couple of years at 89 Charlotte is that the support for locals coming out to the openings was always great. Where you know, the Rochester kind of fell is when I would bring in international. Or national, or really well-known artists would come in, and it would be embarrassing to me that we couldn't rally around, you know, like open our eyes also to, like, who inspired these people. Like, I would bring an artist who inspired me as a creative, and there's almost like crickets compared to the support. So it's not to say that there isn't, you know, emotional support for artists. There absolutely is, but it is that idea of you know. if you like them as an artist, you want to make sure they can keep doing that as an artist.
Let me grab one more phone call. Yeah, this is Betsy in Brighton. Go ahead, Betsy.
Hi, I'm a local watercolor artist, and I have a class at Brighton Recreation in an open studio at the high school. And there's many artists that participate every year in the fall, September Artist Row at the public market. And I find that that is a really great venue for artists like myself who don't have a gallery or a studio where we can sell our work to get out and have the public see our stuff. But I don't think that the newspaper carries or announces it as much as it could. And it's a great venue for people to get original art from local artists. And somebody was talking, you know, among the artists there trying to get a website set up so that local artists could market to local businesses. And so I'm kind of looking forward to that. But I think that Artist Row could be plugged a lot more in our local media.
Agreed.
Yeah. Thank you, Betsy. I don't think you're getting a lot of disagreement here from the panel. Go ahead.
And actually, Betsy hit on one point that has been part of my motto. You know, don't wait for someone else to do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
That goes to all of you out there listening, to the artists, to collectors, creators. Like, don't wait for someone to hand it to you. That's a very passive way to live your life. If you have an idea, find like-minded people and jump in and just do it.
Okay. 20-second answer, Caitlin Mivas. Mike Calden wants to know why many of the buildings that have landmark status don't pay taxes.
I can't even begin to answer that question in 20 seconds. I mean, there's lots. That's a really large issue. I mean, there's lots of vacant properties throughout the city, throughout the region, with out-of-town owners and slumlords owning them. And, you know, that's just, that's in any city. I mean, that's just, and it's not necessarily landmarked properties. It's any properties. It's just, it's a problem.
It's also a values choice. When we set something as a landmark, I think it's a values choice about preservation. Okay, so we're down to our last 15 seconds. Danielle, you get the floor to finish this off, because I want you to remind our listeners there's a lot going on this weekend. Tell us real briefly what's going on.
Okay, one more time. You got to come out to St. Joseph's Park for the Yard's annual Spectre Carnival. Make sure that you go see 1975 Here Lies, which is going through the end of October. There is so much going on in these arts communities. We hope to see you Friday and Saturday, St. Joseph's Park. You'll be sad if you miss it. We're just going to put it out there.
Thank you, Danielle. Fun to see you in the studio.
I know. Thanks,
Evan. We'll see you upstairs. We'll see you around the building. That's Danielle and Eric from Gallery 1975. You still online? Where can we find you?
Oh, yeah. 1975ish.com or at 1975ish on all social media channels.
What a fun conversation this hour. Thank you, Jason, as well. Great talking to you. Cheers. And Caitlin Mivas from the Landmark Society. Thank you, Caitlin.
Thank you.
Look at all the interest in art and preservation. And again, I hope people didn't feel called out, as one of our listeners said I was doing. We're talking about our actions as a community, our status as an arts town. Great stuff today. Thanks to Val, the producer of the program. I'm sorry, Megan Mack is the producer. Val's the engineer. They're both great. I'm Evan.
They are great.
Have a great afternoon.